lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they caught the last train for the coast on the day the music died. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Bill.
Good evening, fellow babies. Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
I never
Episode 255. Settle down. I'll turn this radio show right around. This is the show, and the idea behind the show is that songwriters talk to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. The idea is we share the tips and the techniques, the things we figured out along the way, and we trade them back and forth, and hopefully we all become just a little bit better at writing songs. Hopefully this time we will learn five new things about writing better songs.
I think we're going to learn seven.
I think, Clem, five? Yeah. Four and a half.
Seven. Sorry, my agent told me I was here to talk about the crap of songwriting.
Crap.
Oh,
you said it depends on how the show goes.
Okay.
I'll be your host. My name is Phil Emery, and of course, as per usual, along the ride are the members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Mr. Neil Modi, how you doing, Neil?
Hey, what's happening? Pretty good. Thank you, sir.
And
I still
Mr.
don't understand
Bruce.
The baby thing, though.
I'm Bruce Harrod, and I was in a meeting today, and this woman called me Babe, and everybody went, what? I said, you can call me Babe anytime. So my new name is Babe Harrod.
Babe. Oh, yeah. Babe Harrod. Okay. And keeping an eye on the dials and switches, Linda Lavender. How are you, Linda?
Hello. I'm fine. Thanks.
Thanks for doing the stuff. And working on the social media is Vanessa, but she'll be doing it from home.
Remote job.
Yes. During the show, why don't you send in your comments, questions, and corrections to us at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. Send us a message on Facebook, too, if you want, and we'll share them with the audience in real time, and you can be famous just like us. And don't forget, you can always stop by the website at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest on our show. Behold the triumph, latest reliefs, seven seas of sleaze from Canada's legendary rock armada, White Cowbell, Oklahoma.
It's hard
now
to
in
say,
its 20th
isn't it?
Glorious year. Witness the 70s inspired Boogie Prog Army's seventh full length release featuring seven blistering tracks. Brought to you by seven heavily perspiring musicians. Cry out with jubilation to brand new studio tracks, Into the Sun and Harder Come, Harder Fall. The blast off into varying realms of rootsy yet spacey guitar money.
Who wrote practice. This anyway? Did you write this, Clem?
I don't know. I think our agent wrote it.
Maximalism.
Wait, I wrote it.
We're now speaking
I'm my agent.
With White Cowbell, Oklahoma's band leader, spokesperson, head architect, and all-around smart guy, Clem C. Clemson. Thanks, Clem, for being on our show.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here on CGRU. Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. Where's the bar? CKLN used to have a bar.
The bar's after the show.
Is there an open bar? I can smoke in here, right?
Everything's changed, Clem.
Everything's changed.
It's a whole different time.
So now, if you ever get a chance to see White Cowbell, Oklahoma, I definitely advise to. I've seen you guys a bunch of times, and you always kick ass.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I've seen us many times too, but it was from a different vantage, kind of like a different dimension of seeing. I saw you, and you saw me.
So now,
floor of the stage.
You've had varying numbers of members in the band, like because at one time you seemed to have like just tons of guys on.
Well, there's something like 732 people who've been in this band, and they're all cryogenically frozen in my basement right now. But I tell you, we can confirm that it's very expensive to take all those people on the road in an aeroplane and a van and a van and a room and a hotel and a van and a van and a van and then an airplane.
Expensive.
So now we're down to a convenient five or six or seven.
Okay.
Depending on the day, who wakes up, who makes van call.
So a question a lot of people have is when they're trying to put together a band, so how are you finding these people that you're working with? Because that's going to be a really tough thing.
Shelters. Yes. Shelters.
Just go back to your basement and follow them out.
No, it's just Spidey sense. We got like a bat signal. Sometimes sometimes we just walk up to people and say, hey, want to be in a band? Get in the van now. Now.
But
blue pill or red pill?
That's isn't that kidnapping, Clem? Some people call it that.
It's not enough they agree.
But so, full consent.
But I mean, because back in the day, there used to be Now magazine. We would actually, you know, go through Now magazine and answer ads.
Now there's Kijiji.
Is there Kijiji? But right. How did you like find people you can work with?
Well, we have a large pool of sort of evolving genetic material that we have access to, and so. We knew a lot of people. When we started, there was literally 9 guitar players and 2 drummers and I think 2 keyboard players on stage the first time we ever played. So
was it loud?
It was really loud. It was really loud. And so we just kind of took it from there and kind of, you know, if somebody fell by the wayside, we always had a backup of 7 other guitar players.
Did anybody die, actually? Or?
There's nobody died at that time. Yeah. But my lawyers have suggested I don't get into the time they did.
There's evidence.
Like, are you like finding it through friends of friends type thing? Or?
Well, yeah, I know a lot of people that – I know all the weirdest people in Toronto through various activities. But yeah, and then some people – sometimes we actually put some – just for kicks – put out ads on Craigslist, not saying who we were, and then we get all these responses from people who are completely not suitable. And then we'd get these responses from people we already knew, and then we'd say, yeah, you can come out and try out. And they're like, oh, you clowns. Why didn't you just tell me at the bar that you were looking for a guitar player when I was standing next to you ordering a beer?
But now, Clem, I noticed you have a bit of an accent there. What – are you from like North York or Scarborough?
It's I'm from Scandinavia.
Oh, Scandinavia. Okay, that'll explain it.
Scandinavia, yeah. South Texas, sort of Etobicoke.
Okay, so the western Texas part by way of Etobicoke. Yeah. The Texas part of Etobicoke.
A little bit of
that. I'm really good at accents. I thought it was either Texas. I thought it was either Texas, Oklahoma, or Etobicoke.
Well, yeah. Oklahoma's in the band name, so
yeah, we can call White Cowboy Oklahoma in some circles, but you know that's a whole other circle. That's a whole
It depends what state you're happening to be playing in.
Yeah, it's. It,
you ever go to Wyoming and just call yourselves White Cowbell Wyoming?
We call yes.
Have you ever
played
played Oklahoma?
We've never played. We've driven through.
Okay,
You're
unwelcome,
You know that. We wanted to play Arkansas, but there was already a Black Oak, Arkansas, and so we didn't do that.
That's
so it was just like what Cowbell, Ontario. It didn't have the same ring.
No.
You know.
Right. So now, how are you handling your song? Like you're the main songwriter for the band.
Just by default, because you know some you know they're very busy with their astrophysics careers, and. You know, it's like, hey, you got that song ready? No, I was trying to save the children. Yeah, sure. So it's up to me.
Are most of your band members then, they have a day job? Or do they just drink?
Or they're singing a bunch of other bands. Maybe.
You could say that, day job, night job. It's hard to say job.
it's a pastime.
Book of Job. Have you read the Book of Job lately? Yeah. They're all in there. Main characters.
Yeah.
I write a lot of songs. There were some other people in the band who wrote some songs, and there's some current guys in the band who write some songs. And sometimes we get together, we all write songs, we write bits and pieces, we glue together songs. Sometimes we come up with songs separately, bring them into the band, and say, you're going to play my song.
Do you, is the band kind of going through and doing arrangements, or...?
Oh, no, sometimes, like, you know, it's always different, but we had, like, I remember there was one song, one of our longest songs in our canon, it was from a previous album about 10 years ago, called Keys to the Universe, and it's our proggiest song, and it was literally written every time we got together. We were rehearsing once a week at the time, and people would show up with a section, the kind of Black Sabbath school of songwriting, where like just a bit that has no relation to the other bit. Maybe it has a key that's in the same key.
Oh,
maybe
enough.
It's in the same tempo. Yeah. And we go like, I got the next bit. and you put the bit on, and then this song would be 7 minutes long. And then next week, someone would go, I got another bit. And then the song was 9 minutes long. And then you say, I think the song's long enough. Okay, let's take the first bit and put it at the end.
Bookend it.
So you know it's a song.
Okay. Then it's a song. It's like, a lot of radio. It's like we meant to do that.
A lot of radio airplay on that tune.
You know what's funny, though? I was driving in a van in Southwest Ontario, and I was flicking through the stations, and I was like, and this, I'm like, I know this song. It was that song.
Really? They played
it. I think it was on the Western University. I literally hit the station as the song was starting. I couldn't believe it.
Amazing. That's the only song.
You know when people hear, like, I remember the first time I ever heard my song on the radio. It was a magical moment. That was my magical moment.
Yep.
Most, like, ridiculously long progressive rock song about gods and things. It was like we're singing about the Odyssey or the Silmarillion or something.
Have you had that happen to you yet, Neil, with your band?
No.
Shelter?
Not quite.
Because it happened to me. I was living in Victoria, and I had done an interview at the local campus community station, and I was driving through Victoria one sunny day. On came the tune. It is cool.
It's a good feeling. Yeah. It's a magical moment, especially when it's 2 p.m. and you know there must be at least 7 people listening to that
at the time. Yeah. That's pretty great, for sure. So when you're writing your songs now, I mean, you've been doing this a long time. Do you hear in your head how the band arrangements are going to go? Or do you take it to the band as just like a acoustic guitar and vocal thing and say, guys, do what you want?
We have kind of a formula. What would they do in 1973? It's always been the kind of the frame of White Cowboy Oklahoma songs. What would they do in 1973? What would Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top do? What would Tony Iommi do? What would Jimmy Page do? What would Joe Perry do? What would all those guys and all those Southern rock bands
do? You're actually deliberately being derivative.
Well, it's just a framework.
Okay.
What they do, and this isn't just the songwriting. This is like the album production. This is all of it.
It's
a genre setting. Yeah. And then if we want to go outside that box and be a little bit weird and freak our fans out, we will. But we'll start there. So we'll be what was the question?
I was asking if you hear the arrangements in your head.
Yes. We'll start. Okay. You know, first chorus. There's the middle eight, and then we'll have. Sometimes it'll just start with a riff and stuff, but it'll always be like, burr, 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 and then we always think how. Okay, this is going to be on a record, maybe 3.5 minutes long, but when we play live, maybe we'll stretch this out to 12 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And dynamics is always the most important detail. It's got to have dynamics. Because I don't know if you've seen a White Cowboy Oklahoma show. We take you on a ride, a roller coaster ride.
I've seen it on YouTube.
Yeah, and that is the key to audience manipulation and brainwashing them and making them buy a T-shirt by the time
they leave. That's a great question, you know, because
that's
showbiz.
That's something I've always wondered, because I've always been, you know, I've been in a lot of punk bands, and, you know, we did those fast Ramones 3-minute songs. But I'd be at some shows and people would be playing like their songs and they'd have like 5 or 6 verses. And I used to think that was really boring, but I'm thinking maybe that's actually a good way. Like, have you found that that's a better way of approaching a song live, that people gives a chance for people to get into it?
Well, I'm not really into listening to Bob Dylan do like 17 verses or soliloquies, or it kind of does kind of my eyes start rolling up into the top of my head, I will admit. However, when I say dynamics, the biggest sort of popular song in the last 20 years was that Nirvana song that everybody knows, and everybody copied it. And you know why? Because it had the dynamics. It was like low down tempo verse, and then the chorus comes up, and then the verse, and then you go to an alternative night, go to the dance cave. Everybody, all the kids would be going crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It was a great formula, and everybody went for it because they hadn't done that for a long time. I appreciate that. We would never rip that off or try to copy that. But dynamics in a show, in a song. It's like bringing people up, bringing people down, bringing people up, bringing. I saw Nick Cave in Montreal last year, and I'd never seen him before.
That's great.
And I don't ever listen to Nick Cave, really, but his show was just like up and down. And then I saw him in Toronto again, and then it was just like it was like a roller coaster of emotion. And that's what you got to take your audience on.
Well, speaking of dynamics, cool. Should we hear a song?
So the first song we're going to listen to is Into the Sun. And what was the writing of this one like? Was this a sort of a jam thing?
No, I'll tell you how. You know, it's funny. I don't write songs on acoustic guitar very often. But this was one time. Mm. I was up at my family's abode. And I was sitting on the dock in Georgian Bay. And I had my and I said, Mother, I'm going to go down to the dock and smoke some marijuana. Hope that's not a problem. And she said, just don't let the neighbors see. So I went down. You know, it doesn't matter now.
No.
But I went down and I had my acoustic guitar that I keep up there. And I just started fiddling about. And I guess it was the B minor passage at the beginning, which naturally went to the E major passage. Mm. And then as I was laying on this dock, just messing about, this whole song kind of materialized out of the blue on a Saturday afternoon. And then I brought it back to the band. And then we turned it into this kind of stoner rock sort of epic that you are about to hear over at the Boys and Rays.
Let's have a listen to Into the Sun by White Cowbell, Oklahoma.
Thank you.
And I was Into the Sun by White Cowbell Oklahoma here on Song Talk Radio. What?
In the studio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Louder. Louder.
What? So we're definitely hearing the little bits of Black Sabbath there. One of my favorites. An interesting song because you had the intro, and I sort of thought the intro would go longer, but you got right into the vocals really quick off the top.
Mm-hmm. I've always liked to, even though White Cowboy, Oklahoma is known for extreme excess live and stretching things out and doing weird things forever, as far as getting to the meat and potatoes of the song, we don't always do this, but I really like just getting to the vocals right off the top. Yeah. We have one song where it's like, we have like a half bar measure. We have a half bar like twaka twaka, and then the
vocal starts.
The vocals go, and I've done it so many times. It's the only time I can find an E just out of like the universe. I guess reference note. I don't know how I do it. It's just in my somehow like I've done it like
you've
you
done
know,
so many
a thousand
times.
Times.
It's just there, yeah.
It's just always, there.
Yeah. Right. What do you think, Neil?
It's your superpower.
It's my one superpower. I can find an E and I hear thwaka, thwaka.
The thwakas must be in the right key. I really like it. I mean, it's got a great energy to it. It's got an enormous amount of contrast and dynamic, just like you were saying, like especially like the rhythmic change in the chorus where you're throwing in the triplets. Da, 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 da. Like that's really cool. I'm kind of curious about the how the process went. Like, where did it start? Was it part of the riff? Was it the Into the Sun hook?
It was literally laying on a dock, staring into the sun, going dinga 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 on my acoustic guitar, and then going to the gong gong, then doing E shuffle thing, and then just coming up with that and going back to the B and the E and the B and the E and the B, and then coming up with the chorus after.
Right. Now, Phil, you're talking about how the bits that were Black Sabbath. So for the kids who don't know Black Sabbath, can you be specific about what makes a bit of this Black Sabbath?
Definitely the approach of the bass and some of the guitar, especially in the solo, I guess.
The little instrumental
solo
break.
Solo is,
we call it guitar-mini break.
Guitar-mini break,
Guitar-mini break. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I guess when I was coming up with that bit, I was thinking Thin Lizzy as well and all this like sort of heavy Celtic rock, major, ba-da-da, 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 like Boys Are Back in Town. That was where that.
Yeah, because that's what's kind of cool about this too, is that it's kind of it is kind of defying any specific genre. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's a little bit of metal, a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll, whatever.
Like
it's kind of a little blues in there, sure. It's all.
But,
it's kind of
like
a
1973.
It's 1973.
1973. What did they do in 1970? Blues and country hard rock.
They were combining all of them. That's right. It's like a synthesis. That's too fancy a word. It's a mélange.
A mélange.
It's like a mutt.
You've just described White Cowboy, Oklahoma perfectly.
It's a potpourri.
A mutt.
So, what do you think there, Bruce?
Well, I was paying a lot of attention to the drums because there was this relentless kick going, and then some toms that were thrown in. Neil is a drummer, so I thought you probably noticed those as well. I don't notice the time signature so much, but I do know when and you mix the kick very kick drum. I mean, for you kids out there, I don't know what I'm saying. It's very basic. When you push this pedal, it goes thunk 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 thunk, and it's just driving, right? Which is really the heart of rock and roll, is that driving beat, right? But the kick was really mixed high, and then the toms came in, and so much of rock and roll depends on the rhythmic, the way the rhythm's handled. That would be the rock, and then there's the roll, and the moving in and out of that. I also like the voice being the classic rock tenor voice, kind of screaming. But a lot of screaming, I don't like it. I like how you scream, Clem.
Well, I will say a lot of that scream is not me. I do most of the singing and the lower end of the harmony. But there's a singer named Joan Smith. I don't know if you know Joan Smith from the band Littlefoot Longfoot. And she plays guitar for I'll remember in a second. But she plays guitar for a lot of people. And she was in Wicalba, Oklahoma for a couple years touring with us, and she recorded that high-end Robert Plant stuff at the end.
Oh, it wasn't a guy. Okay.
You know, it wasn't me. You know, I tried. I tried, right. You know, I was like gargling urine, like meatloaf. I'm like, this isn't working, guys. We got to call up the best. So we called up Joan Noah. But Joan was, and I like it. There's a Led Zeppelin track, Battle of Evermore. And it's Robert Plant and the singer of Fairpoint Convention is on that.
That's really cool.
And very similar voices, but Joan does that Robert Plant freak out at the end of that. And she's on the next track we're going to listen to as well.
Yes.
Harmonizing with me. Mm-hmm. And you should look her up. She's very good. Joan Smith from Littlefoot Longfoot, ladies and gentlemen.
And we're going to do that, but we'll be back right after.
Coming up on Song Talk Radio, February 12th, we are doing a special show, Social Media for Musicians, with Emmanuel.
Yes.
Does Emmanuel have a last name?
He does.
No,
and on February 19th, we're going to be talking about like writing
Cher.
Hooks in songs.
Yes.
Yeah, Cher. It's like Cher.
Yes.
She has an last name, but we don't use it.
Okay. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us. Our next songwriters meetup is on Thursday, February the 21st, 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transat Club. It's free to join and free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link over to the songwriters meetup. And over to you, Bruce, for
we have a little
Wackinition.
Wackinition. See the clever way we put together wacky and
don't explain it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's from A Musician's Dictionary by David Barber and Dave Donald, two Canadians, with a preface by Yehudi Menuhin. Not bad.
Yehudi.
Okay, form. There's three definitions for form, F-O-R-M. One, the shape of a composition. Two, the shape of the musician who plays the composition. Three, the piece of paper that must be completed in triplicate in order for the musician to get enough money from the Arts Council to play the composition.
Triplicate.
It's right. Canadian, okay?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It's also like written 30 years ago, triplicate.
Yeah.
That's true.
Except carbon copy. It's a lie. It had to be in sextuplicate.
Sextuplicate.
Okay. Now, don't get fancy on us here.
So on the... On your lyrics,
I filled out those forms.
Oh, yeah. Did you fill them out in sextuplicates?
I did.
Whatever it took.
So on your lyric sheets, you have Slick Monkey. Is that your publishing company? Or?
Yeah, I guess that. It's our label. It's our
label. Can you talk about
label
and why you formed it and how that works?
Yeah,
a lot
smoking,
of
I think, yeah.
A lot of
smoking here too, right?
A lot of people want to know about that.
Sorry, say it again. Sorry.
about label. Like, you started this label. Can you talk about, like, why you guys started the label and basically what it means, actually?
The name? Or
no,
just...
label.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
from a music business perspective.
Just because early on, we didn't expect any favors from, especially in this country, labels who tend to deal in sort of safer bets than us. So we thought to ourselves, we should really do this, just rely on ourselves. And that was probably a good idea, especially in this place. And early on, we're like, I think this digital thing might just catch on. I don't know about you guys, but I think this digital thing might catch on.
It's here to say.
So the one foray into legalities and stuff we ever did was make a label that we could, so we could get a digital distribution deal. And then hence, you know, it just is easy peasy, peasy, peasy for us to get all the stuff on the Orchard and then thus onto Spotify and all those other ones. And we don't have to, that was just our, and we did that early. We were early adopters maybe. And iTunes, when there was iTunes, and when people were still doing that. But and then that was the only thing we've done. We are the most business, just not savvy band ever. But this is one smart thing we did was just to kind of like, so we could distribute our stuff ourselves.
So you so you say you started this label. So you like you in, is it an incorporated company or is it a limited company?
We're gonna have to talk to our attorney about that. I don't know. He just throws me scraps once in a while and he's like put the lotion in the basket and he shuts the door
because people are gonna want to know what they're they want to make a label, but what does that mean?
I think you do. Yeah, I think the steps are make business, go talk lawyer. Make him talk to thing, and then it, give him the money. So, okay.
and what does this do? I mean, look, 'cause there's songwriters out there who want to know this, right?
So, well, I think there's other ways to do it now too. I'm not sure, but this is just the way we did it. And there's this company called The Orchard, based in New York, and they're a digital distributor, and they get stuff in films and stuff like that. But the main thing for us is you just upload your music. You used to have to send them things. Now you just upload it. And within a week or two, it's on Spotify and Amazon Prime.
Oh, is that like CD Baby, which I used 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
Yeah, I guess it's the same thing, but they're a bit more maybe next level from CD Baby. But at this point, who cares? As long as it gets out there and it's available, because most people are just doing things digitally now.
So where does your income come? Do you sell off the stage, the original CD? Do people still like to hold that?
Oh, yeah. We sell records. We sell shirts. We sell CDs. That's our...
It's all about the merch.
Yeah. People leave, but, we also make money from the shows.
Yeah.
But, nobody's making records from record stores anymore. Did you hear that Sunrise Records bought HMV today?
Yes.
What the hell?
Oh. Yep. They bought Sunrise Records right over around the corner.
Really?
They're on Yonge Street. They bought HMV Britain. All of it.
Why?
All of it.
But why?
Britain? I don't know. Maybe they're gonna sell pot.
Oh, perfect. That's a good idea. They've got the audience already.
Yeah.
I should have gone in a pot years ago.
Vinyl would be a good combination.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we always thought maybe now that it's legal, we won't get in trouble. Well, maybe we could sell a record, but with a bag of weed inside of it.
Oh, yeah. And bonus
then,
gift.
As a bonus. Mm-hmm. And then, people just... It's like, I bought this bag of weed. It came with this record.
Yeah, cross promotion.
Yeah, cross promotion.
Yeah, you got it.
Up in smoke. All right. Should we talk about the next song?
Yeah, why not?
So harder come, harder fall.
Right. So what was the writing of this one like?
This one, I recall sitting in a condominium that I was staying.
Squatting in.
Squatting in is a good word, too. But I remember writing this. And it just started with the riff. It goes, G-A-C-D, G-A-C-D, G-A-C-D. And, I just kept going. I was like, I'm going to write a song right now and I'm not going to get up until I'm finished writing a song. And I sat down. That's the first thing that I started doing. And then it was a song.
Oh, wow. Do you use the Nashville numbering thing or it's like a one, that would be a 1, 2, 3, 5 or whatever?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
You sometimes fall, because that's a weird one, isn't it? GA? That would be a 1 and a 2 then.
Yeah, so I was just sliding up from the GA.
Oh, okay.
So it goes 1, 4. Basically, it's 1, 4, 1, 4, 1, 4. I learned, one of my favorite songwriters is this guy, Doug Somm. Do you know Doug Somm? He's not around anymore, but he was from Texas, and he was in the Sir Douglas Quintet. This is talking about the 60s and 70s. And later on, the Texas Tornadoes. And I learned from him, listening to his music, that you could write a song with 2 chords.
Mm-hmm.
1-4, 1-4, 1-4. Mm-hmm. All his best-known songs, I think his best-known song is probably Mendocino by the Sir Douglas Quintet, which was a minor hit, I think, in 1969. And I was like, wow, it just goes, it's either C... F or A D, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it's 1-4, 1-4, 1-4, 1-4. And I realized you can write a kick ass song with 2 chords. Forget 3 chords.
Yeah.
2 chords.
What do you do to change up the bridge or change up the chorus? You don't?
No. That's the amazing thing about it. It just stays, and James Brown knew the same thing.
Yeah.
He would sometimes just do one amazing song with 1 chord, right?
Yeah.
So
depends what you do with the melody.
Who needs a third chord?
It's the melody that brings the variation, right?
So this song, okay, so it's got some like let's move it up, but it's basically 1-4, 1-4 until it gets to the pre-chorus. Maybe there's some little, right. little stuff to kind of distract you right. to, from realizing that the chorus and the verse are the same thing.
So did you like? So did the band do the arrangements, or?
I think I wrote this one pretty much as it was when we went in. South Paul Jones, the bass player, and I demoed these, made like really crummy sort of on the spot demos with like a little rhythm thing that went like
Is that the crap of music?
I don't know. I think it was like a Casio or something. Oh, Casio. And we made this thing and then we emailed it to everybody in the band. They were like, told the drummer, can you make the drum sound exactly like just kidding. But that's how that started.
Well, let's hear it.
Cool. Yeah, let's take a listen to Harder Come, Harder Fall by White Cowbell, Oklahoma. Bell, Oklahoma.
Excellent.
You're on Song Talk Radio.
Smattering of applause.
Yeah. That's rock and roll.
Mm. Definitely great tune.
Yeah, that's an awesome tune.
Shucks.
And again, that middle sort of solo part, which is kind of more of like a musical break as opposed to a long, wanky solo.
Yeah, because if you want to see a long, wanky solo, just come to see our concert. Because it's just
disgusting.
One long, wanky solo.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're famous for those, are you?
We're very famous for our long, wanky solos.
I'm going to ask you a question about a live performance. Can you tell when you have the crowd and when you've lost them? in terms of when a
yeah,
song's
because they left the building.
No, I'm talking about the energy because you know you have that superpower to be able to feel the E.
Well, yeah.
So maybe you can feel the vibe in the room. Like, so,
oh, absolutely.
A lot of artists have said to us in live performance, they can tell when the audience, they've lost the audience. They're just not with them because the song is going too long or it's a boring patch, whatever.
We change tack all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of are like reading the compass as we're, you know, piloting the ship mm-hmm. of the show. You know, if you were in the studio, you'd see me pantomiming mm-hmm. being on the wheelhouse. Yeah. But
that was more like a truck driver, actually.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah.
I think
so that's why it sunk.
Oh, yeah. It's like this.
But,
like this.
but yeah, we do all the time. We'll just be like, this isn't working, guys. Let's just cut this bit.
And so you just end it, go to a new song.
Yeah, yeah. Or we'll just stop. Sometimes we'll just be like, I'll just turn around to the band and like, get.
Cut it out.
And then we'll say like, is everything all right, Kingston, Ontario? Is everything all right, Timmins, Ontario? Is everything all right, Nijmegen? Netherlands? Are you okay? And then we'll just take it from there. We'll just try to kick it off.
What did you think of the song there, Neil?
I kind of like this one more than the other one, maybe. Maybe it's a little more, I don't know, a little more rock and roll. But I appreciate what you were saying off the top about the two-chord sort of little progression, right? But the chorus, like you break it up with the pre-chorus a little bit different. And then, but the chorus is like the same riff as the verse, but then the vocal line is like double the tempo almost, right? It's like, it doesn't have, like the verse has a little more space in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you kind of amp up the energy that way, right?
Correct.
Even though the riff is the same, but then,
you know what I mean? You're right. The chorus goes double time.
Yeah.
Baka, 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 baka. And then the verse is like half of that.
Yeah.
And then there's little variations. Sometimes instead of going G, A, C, D, G, A, C, D, we'll switch it around. We'll just kind of switch the chord order around mm-hmm. and hang on the D or something. And for the layman, that is fifth dot. Fifth string,
yeah,
right.
dot,
but
fifth string.
No, but it just goes to show for our listeners, like, you know, it doesn't have to be super advanced, right? It can be a simple thing, like just double time it, and then you've got yourself another section.
No,
right?
You can write a progressive rock song, and it can be not as interesting as, like I said, when I was talking about Doug Somm earlier, where that was my big lesson was with these two chord songs
mm-hmm.
and it's all in dynamics that you make to two chords interesting,
right?
Or James Brown with a one chord song that could be like just have everybody perplexed in a concert hall for 15 minutes on one song writing on one chord, or George Clinton would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like so awe-inspiring, and it's what we try to do at our shows.
What's an example of a one chord song from James Brown, for example?
Like
Mustang Sally or
Goodfoot? No. Goodfoot is pretty like dun, 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 dun. It's
like Pass the Peas or something like that, you know? Just like he's got so many, and the song was just a groove.
It's just about the groove.
It's a groove, right?
And a good melody.
And a good bass line, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you got to have something.
Yeah, something. When we say melody, we're not just talking about the vocal melody. We're talking about the guitar riff, the bass line.
Yes, I understand.
Whatever.
But if you're going to stay on one harmony,
you're
going to have a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah,
to make it work.
Breakdowns and build it back up. And
It's all about the dynamics.
Well, when I listened to that tune, Phil, I was thinking of Huey Lewis in the News, as Sport. Like, only because that was, I didn't listen to much rock music at all, but when they came out and they brought out that album Sport, they are fun. It was the first time I heard rock music that had a sense of humor. Just, I think Huey Lewis, like Hugh Clem, was a bit of a character, as we wasps say, quite a character. So I think Huey was like big character on stage, and you could just tell he was having fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about your band. So.
Well, thanks. Did you know that he played harmonica on Thin Lizzy's famous live album?
Oh,
really?
Alive and Dangerous.
I did not.
That's the harmonica is Huey Lewis.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think some of that album was also recorded in Toronto at the Diamond.
At the Diamond.
I was going to ask you that, Glenn.
It all is connected.
Where do you play when you're in Toronto? Where can our fans of this radio show go and hear you?
Generally, Lee's Palace or the Horseshoe Tavern.
Nice.
Are places where they own our souls.
So I'd have to stand up for the whole concert then, right? There's no
You can sit on the floor.
Come side stage.
Do people dance?
Of course.
You can always lean on the stage.
Yeah, vomit.
They vomit. They do all the things. They vomit, dance. They they become entranced.
One thing I wanted to ask you is about how you guys construct a set, because that's an art in and of itself. Do you have any strategies that you're using?
Again, dynamics. It's all dynamics. You start, and most bands will know this. You start off. You come out with a.
Yeah.
And then you bring down a couple like sort of down tempo groovy tunes, and then you end the set, generally speaking, with a more.
Yeah.
And then you come out for an encore with, and then you come down a little bit. So it's just those.
You express yourself so well. Yeah,
those are Louisville Slugger sounds.
So big.
So you have a little dip in the middle, but but we also. If you've ever written a set list, we try to have groups of three. Generally, groups of three. We'll have all our set list written on paper will be three songs, and then there's an empty spaces for a bit where then the band tunes. Somebody goes to the mic. Sometimes if we do we do these kind of special shows at Christmas that are. Especially offensive, and
the Antichrist.
Rome is burning type of stuff. And in the actors, additional actors will come out and just do a little pantomime for a few minutes while everybody tunes, and then we'll do three more songs, and then so it'll be like first act, second act, third act. We'll do three sets of three songs, maybe a couple more thrown in there. So it's kind of like a theatrical sort of model.
Cool. So when you have a triplet of songs, as a fancy term, I know, but three songs in a row, there's no stopping. And as soon as that song's ended, it's two, three, and.
Yeah, it's
I love that. So no chit-chat between
them. No chit-chat, unless somebody's gone radically
just go
out of tune.
Right through.
Yeah. And they're like putting up their hand like, talk! Yeah. Somebody talk! Talk! I'm having an emergency!
Well, because the thing about sets is, that I found out when you're playing is that it's like a bicycle. You get the momentum going. And the bands that stop between every song, it's like you're stopping and you have to start up the bike again.
Yeah.
And then you stop and you have to start up the bike. And the great bands, they kind of build up on that,
No, you have to keep the momentum going. But if you get to a point, it's too much. And then the audience start to get overstimulated. It's really a science.
Yeah, they need breaks.
It's a bit of an art, isn't it? You've got to have some finesse to it, right?
I learned, I've dabbled in the world of DJing and stage management, and I've all areas of entertainment, stage entertainment, and it's puppet mastery. Mm-hmm. It's like it's puppet mastery of an audience, of a crowd, of a sort of an organized jolly mob, and you have to sort of you can manipulate their moods and their smiles and their frowns. And if you're good at it, if you've been doing it long enough, if you're in a band, you figure these things out. So everybody's they're enjoying how they're manipulating their moods.
Yeah.
And it's like a good movie, right? You get to the first act, second act down, third act. It's very intentional. People think that the White Cowboy Oklahoma show is pure chaos. It is, actually. Forget what I just said.
But it looks like
it's organized chaos.
Well planned chaos.
Well, and that's
the thing about being, there's a difference between being a musician and being an entertainer.
Yes.
And there's some people who are great musicians, but they're not very great entertainers.
Yes.
And you have to figure out where you want to sit within that spectrum, And learning how to do things like construct a set. Mm-hmm. And if you're just in a band and no one's actually very experienced, you have literally no idea how to do that because that's something that people never talk about, you know?
Yeah. Oh, the deadly thing is where they do a little talk between after every song.
Every song?
But the guy thinks he's funny, but he's actually not. Yeah. And he goes on three times as long.
As you should.
Like, it's better. You started doing that pretty early with Bay Shelter. Nielsen, a band, is just when they're loving you, just go
just
into the next song. Don't stop, for God's sake.
Funny. I watched last night. This is a funny time. I watched, I'd never seen it before, the Robert Altman movie, Nashville. I've never seen it. And there's
movie,
a scene, and there's a character that's supposedly a synthesis of Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton or something. And she's kind of twigging, like she's starting to lose her marbles. And she's doing the show, and every time she starts a show, she goes into another little soliloquy, and the band's like, they're like, oh my God. And like, the manager finally gives her the hook and pulls her off stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that can happen.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't around at the time, but I saw a reenactment, and I've seen videos of like 1970s era Genesis. You're talking about the prog rock thing, right? And every song is in a different tuning. So these guys are in the back retuning their guitars to a completely different key, and Peter Gabriel would be in the front of the stage, you'd just be reciting some obscure poetry or something like that. And it's literally like a little down low, and then they jump back in.
Didn't
the
have
next
a guitar
song.
Tech bring him a new guitar?
I don't think so. No.
Probably
okay.
Not
well,
all so.
Right.
Yeah. But I think they actually made that part of the act.
You know, when you talk about too much intensity, you know, I think of Shakespeare when I see you. Actually, Clem, I think of Shakespeare.
I get that all
because,
the time.
Yeah, because you know. When Shakespeare wrote his tragedies, he had something called comic relief. So in the deepest tragedies, he'd have the gravediggers do jokes. Mm. So with the same thing with a rock show, you can't go at 10 out of 10 intensity. You will wear out the audience. They will be tired of the volume, and it eventually is diminishing returns, right? Mm. So there you take the little break, chat a bit, maybe come up with more of a down-tempo thing, and then start building it up again, right? So take it from Shakespeare. He knew how to pace a thing, right?
For me, it was, you know, growing up with like bands like Alice Cooper and Kiss, and most of these were before my time even, and funk from the 70s, and George Clinton's Funkadelic, Parliament Funkadelic. They put on shows that were like Shakespeare, but with way more cocaine.
Way more cocaine.
Yeah. So... And so when I was growing up, I was like, that is so cool. One day, I'm going to do that.
You like the way they pace their show?
Yeah. We don't have the budget, unfortunately.
Okay. what did you like about that? You liked the way they paced the show? They kept it moving.
Just the theatrics and the dynamics and the pacing and stuff. You know,
do you have costumes, Clem?
We do have costumes.
What do you wear? Are you Oklahoma or are you cowbells?
Sometimes I wear a white suit until I get to the point of the tour where it's just murderously smelly and moldy. And
not
gross.
So white anymore.
And then I just throw it in the trash.
No budget for the cleaners.
Until I find another white suit.
Okay.
And then we just become a t-shirt band.
Oh, okay.
But we have, I don't know, we do this holiday show in December that does have a lot of people wearing costumes, and you will have to come see it. And there's some people wearing no costumes and nothing at all, in fact.
What?
Ooh,
shocking.
Gratuitous.
That's quite a promise. And I hear the band, so that means that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. Special thanks to Clem. Thanks for coming out from White Cowboy, Oklahoma.
Awesome
thanks
stuff,
very
man.
Much for having me.
Awesome stuff.
Great stuff.
I can smoke in here, right?
Joan Smith and the Jane Does.
That's the one.
Yeah. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher.com, or now Spotify. We're even on Spotify.
Yay.
Don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find the links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page. And if you happen to be in the Toronto area and you're a songwriter, please join us at the next Songwriters Meetup on Thursday, February 21st.
Even if you're an aspiring songwriter.
From 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Transact Club.
And a special shout-out to Vanessa Vreeland, our wonderful social media lady.
Yes.
It's her birthday on Thursday.
Happy birthday, Vanessa.
Happy birthday, Vanessa. You're the best. Thank you.
Well, thanks. And speaking of, thanks, Vanessa, for doing the social media even while you're packing for your trip. And thank you for Linda for
thank
keeping
Linda.
Us sound and good.
You're welcome.
And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. You can follow Bruce at
BruceHarrett.com.
You can follow Neil at
NeilMody.com.
Clem, how do we get more of your stuff?
Oh, you can go to Bandcamp. Look at Wakaba, Oklahoma on Bandcamp. You can go to Spotify. You can go to iTunes or Apple Music, as it's now known. You can,
That's
Bandcamp.
Enough.
Yep.
And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Keep on writing.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Good night.